This is Loretta Northcutt Williams interviewing the Honorable Judge Sheldon Gardner. Good afternoon. How are you today?
Just fine.
That's good. First, I would like to ask you a bit about your background. Mm-hmm. I understand that your mother was a Russian immigrant and your father a Lithuanian immigrant.
The interesting thing, if you come from Eastern European background, they're all Eastern European Jews who come from the area of Poland, Russia, Ukraine. My mother was born near Kiev, and my father near Riga. Okay. They both came over as very young. I think my mother, I don't know, was probably 8 or 10, and my father was probably 14.
How common was it to have parents from Russia and Lithuania?
Well, if you're from my ethnic group, it was very common. I think from about 1880 to the time that the Russian government fell, about 1920, I think there were about 3 million Jews that came to America. That's my guess, I'm not exactly sure. But it was very common. The area I was raised and the group I was with was very common. This was probably the predominantly Jewish ethnic group in this country at the time. I was born in Mount Sinai Hospital on the west side, May 27, 1928. It was just about the time of the beginning of the Depression.
Okay. Did you also grow up around the area of Mount Sinai Hospital?
Actually, we moved around a lot. When people were very poor, they moved frequently. But I lived for, I would say, the greater part of my younger days around the area which is referred to as Douglas Park, which is the area, Lawndale it's also referred to, basically between Roosevelt to 22nd Street, Albany, which is just east of Kedzie over and about Crawford, was the general area.
And about how long were you in that area?
At the age of 16, I started going to the University of Chicago and their program they had where you could go after 2 years of high school. And really, till that time, I was never much out of the community. And we remained there, oh, I guess for another 3, 4, 5 years. My parents had a little store on the west side. As things got better, they ended up with a store in River Forest, and we lived in Oak Park for a period of time.
And what sort of store did they have?
A little grocery store. Coming out of the Depression, they had a little store. I think we rented for about $25 a month. We lived behind the store, two brothers, my parents and myself. And the bakery gave you a showcase for nothing, and the dairy gave you a little refrigerator, and you started out. So little by little, it grew to be more successful, and we made a better living.
Okay. So then, do you consider the Douglas Park neighborhood where you were from when someone asks you where you were from?
You know, as I mentioned earlier, the West Side was the place where the Jewish immigrants came to. I really regard Chicago as my place. I've lived here all my life, lived in Oak Park and in Evanston, but never more than a mile from the city. So I really think of myself as a Chicagoan. I've lived most parts of the city.
Okay. What sorts of community centers or organizations do you remember from this general area of Douglas Park, Oak Park, River Forest, when you were coming up?
It was a little bit, not a whole lot. I wasn't involved that much in organizations. We had our buddies and we walked around and had a fascinating neighborhood. I think I was talking to a group. The little area we lived in, the block or so, was literally a League of Nations. We had everything there, except there were no Negroes in the area, but we had everything living in the area, Hispanics, people from the border states, Mexicans, Jews, Poles, and if we had a little softball game, we probably have 8 or 9 people of 6 different groups. And it was interesting because people talk about Latinos, but I didn't know any Latinos. Everybody was Mexican. And they came up to Chicago to work in the mills. So they're Mexican, there were Poles, there were Italians, there were Jews. I'm not supposed to call people hillbillies, but they referred to as hillbillies. There was people who came from America in the border states, okay? And you didn't know much exactly where they came from. They intermixed. One of the things that was great in our neighborhood, there's never any fighting between the groups. I mean, people might have a turf war and end up in our area, but they're never fighting people in our area. Everybody got along. And indeed, there are still some people who I remember from our area that, you know, that you remember after, say, 40, 50, 60 years. It was a very nice place. Everybody was very much at ease.
So you said that there may have been a turf war, although it didn't spill over to your particular block and area. Did that ever affect the people living in your
community? It happened, and you knew it happened, but that was only the size of it. Yeah. People, there was very low threshold of violence. And I know when we were in grammar school, somebody might goof around a little, but there was never anything really meaningful. It was very, very nice.
Then you mentioned your two brothers. Are they older or younger than you?
They're both deceased. In fact, my wife and I have no parents or siblings. I'm 76. My two brothers were 4.5 and 5.5 years older than me. My oldest brother was always the one who worked in the store and everything. And he had a, I suppose as a character, he hated responsibility. So he never got any meaningful job. My next oldest brother was a professor at Stony Brook, at New York University, Stony Brook, New York. And interestingly enough, in fact, I went through the university and he came there after I got out. And we kind of passed each other. And he was a chemist and he went into education. And I wanted to teach economics. It was very funny. I've always liked social sciences. And I do, I might say, regard law as an applied social science. It's people's disputes and how they're resolved. And it's marvelous because of how they're resolved without killing each other. And we have a really very, very fine legal system, I believe. But I decided I was going to go into economics. In fact, I had a course with Milton Friedman, who is very famous now. And I went to the University of Chicago. I was 16 years old. There's a story I always tell. Stop me if I talk too much. But here I am in an ethnic neighborhood, kids growing up, and all of us, none of us, came from anything except immigrants or poor education. And they give me a book list and I go over to Douglas Park Library, which was fascinating. It was probably the busiest library in the country because that's where all the immigrant kids went to get books. And I asked for Antigone and everybody bust out laughing. How was I to know that A-N-T-I-G-O-N-E spelled Antigone? Okay, because it was not even it wasn't in my framework of knowledge. And the University of Chicago, it's really one of the great schools. You go in and you get a lot of ideas of things of the world, and you get a lot of growth at the college and the UNC, which, as I said, you can start after 2 years of high school. So I've got 10 years of college and 2 years of high school.
Yes, that's interesting. So at what school did your education begin? Grammar school was
Pope School. Well, I went a little bit, I think, Von Humboldt, rural schools, and we moved along. But most of it was Pope School for the last 4 years or so, which was a relatively progressive school and really quite a wonderful school. And I enjoyed it and had a lot of friends there. And it was really nice. Then I went on to a school called Farragut, which was famous because every year they scored from 7 to 14 points in football a year. They were famous for music and had no sports. It was an interesting school. Where we lived was kind of a coming together of four different ethnic groups. Farragut was a bohemian school, Czechs. And behind them were Polish people who were further over east of them. Then there was a Jewish community further down south. And behind us was an Italian community. So there was always a good cross-section of people there. Farragut was a funny school. Now this is I graduated to the senior of Let's Remember Pearl Harbor. That was right after December 7th. Indeed, that's today, isn't it? December 7, 1942. And the war had just started, and there was tremendous isolationism. In fact, Schroeder's time started, and the slogan was "Millions for Defense, but not 2 cents for the Schroeder Tribune." The Tribune was a very isolationist newspaper. And the war was very terrible, and at the time, being Jewish, you had a very strong sense of inferiority, because Jews were being murdered, and the Americans, it wasn't their battle for most of them, didn't want to get involved with the war. And you had some interesting experience, and I haven't had much anti-Semitism in my life. We had a Latin teacher who was really a Nazi, and she would set her exams on the Jewish holidays. Yeah, and the kind of thing you had was the different kinds of sets of relationship. The country has changed in the last 50, 60 years. There's much more sensitivity to everybody. And I had some wonderful people in Farragut. It wasn't a great school, but there was a little crippled lady named Miss Clark who took an interest in me and was the one who convinced me to go to the University of Chicago. And I think it's so interesting because some of the people who care, that's why I always try to be good to young people who come to me, because we owe all that to the next generation. And that's what we're here for.
Okay. How did the Jewish students get around the Latin exams then to pass the class?
She didn't fail anybody, but she made it more difficult than you try to avoid her classes. Okay. And she was the only one. I'm not going to say it was that widespread. But it was a different country then. It was very isolationist. And there was no ethnic relations in the same way we have today, except for those of us who played together, okay. It was a different country. It's a much better country now.
When you decided to attend Farragut then, did you have a choice?
I didn't have a choice.
Okay.
I should have, and I'll say this even though we're on tape, I should have lied. Where we live was divided in four parts: Farragut, Harrison, Marshall, Manly. And the kids who were smart lied and went to Marshall. Marshall is an outstanding school. Just really Sidney Harris. There are all kinds of great people that came out of there. If I felt it was wrong to lie about where you lived and go to the other place. Harrison was a moderately decent school. It wasn't a good school. Manly was turned over to the Army and closed in a couple of years at the time. Manly was a good school. Manly had something delightful. Their graduating class came over en masse to Farragut. And they had the most wonderful relationship between Jews and Italians. People were there, they were literally blood brothers with each other. And it was really very nice to see. Wonderful, wonderful relationships.
Oh. Yeah. Well, did you form any such relationships?
It was very funny, we always kid. Most of the groups we were with were Jews. We always had one Greek. So I grew up wherever I was, even until my law partnership. There were many Jews, and there was always a Greek there. And indeed, a man with the unusual name of Lampros Lampropoulos I saw a couple of years ago after he had graduated, and it was very funny when it was a Jewish holiday. Somebody called into the office and say, I'm Lampros Lampropoulos' aunt, can he come home? And then we all went to Riverview. Riverview was a big amusement park in those days. So we were with large groups. When I went to Farragut, I had some friends who were bohemian. I made friends with everybody, and I was never very devout. I had a bar mitzvah, which is what every Jewish boy, not everyone, but you usually get at the age of 13, you read part of the five books that make up the Torah, and you get presents. Okay. And there were four of us, interestingly enough, who were pretty successful in grammar school. One man retired, I think he was a vice president of Northwestern Railroad. One became an accountant, and my very closest friend, who just died, became a travel agent. So we kept the relationship. And I was always, first of all, I was a heavy reader, which I still am. I love to read. I do a lot of books on tape now. I love to read and to listen, and I think reading is opening the world to me. Okay. And so I worked hard at school. I had gotten in trouble because I've always had this empty sense of humor, which I've always had. And not in deep trouble. I got chastised by the teachers as being very smart, as I did on my aptitude test, but not working hard. I think boys mature different. I believe strongly boys mature differently than girls. They're a couple of years behind. I don't know why, but girls seem to feel that they're going somewhere before boys do. Boys got to goof for a while. And, you know, it's a generalization. It may not be totally true. When I went to the University of Chicago, it was a different world. In fact, I did a talk on my book, and I said that I didn't realize there were any Jews outside of Eastern European Jews. Now, remember, this is before the war, and the German Jewish refugees didn't come over until later. And so these were the only people I knew. And at the University of Chicago, I met other people. I met people who were German Jews who family came over a century earlier. I met people. Chicago was a funny school. It had people all the way, I guess that would have been 44 toward the end of the war. We had people who were 45 years old who came back from the army, and some people who were 14. So it was the greatest mix you ever saw. And we used to always say that an average C student at the University of Chicago was an A student anywhere else. I don't know if it's true, but you know, you have a certain ego you have. I did pretty well. I had a half scholarship for a period of time. I met my wife there, and it was a nice place. We had some unbelievable, Maynard Krieger was one of our professors, Donald Winkelstein. We had some wonderful professors there, and they were always interested. And in fact, one of my professors used to refer to me as a Russian peasant, because I'd be walking against the wind with my ideas, facing into the storm of any kind of thing, because I always did like to learn. And believe it or not, as old as I get, I learn new things every day, and that's the excitement, particularly of law. And life has been good to me. I was in candidacy for my master's degree, did all my work, never finished my thesis, which was supposed to be the early Industrial Revolution in New England from 1806. I think you're about time to turn over? No. Okay. From 1806 to 1816, I never finished it. I don't think the world missed anything. And I had a combined minor in poli-sci and in history. Interestingly enough, why I don't know, I never had much foreign history, being Jewish, being Asian, being European, I just never had much. But that wasn't that uncommon. I had a lot of American history and really enjoyed American history. And I liked poli-sci because I was involved in many things in the amateur political world. I was ahead of the Independent Voters of Illinois. I don't know if the name means anything to you, IVI. I was a John Anderson delegate. I was the 1980 Republican Convention. I was state chair for John Anderson's independent campaign. It was very funny. I did all kinds of political things. I was a regular Republican. I was a regular Democrat. I have strong feelings that people don't belong to parties. Parties belong to people. So it never bothered me. And indeed, even though I've been independent, people know I'm independent, and it isn't like somebody jumping ship that they've been all their life, okay? I will say that in this last election, I probably become more Democratic. Bush is hard to take, just leave it at that. And I didn't mind, for example, I like McCain. I think he's an honesty. In fact, the two people I like most are Lieberman and McCain, because they're decent, honorable people. And I think so much of what we get is garbage for people, and we look for it. I think Kerry lost so badly, not because he was a bad man, but he sure was a poor pitch man. Okay. And in IVI, I did hundreds of interviews of candidates. We worked for all types of candidates. I started out, I should get back to being married, shouldn't I? I was married in June 25th, I'm looking at my ring because it's inscribed there. If you take a look. June 25th, 1950. My wife was born and raised in Minnesota. She hated the small town. She went from there to Washington where she worked a little during the war. Then came to Chicago to live with her aunt, then go to the University of Chicago. And we met at some kind of outing. And romance stirred, and we went together for about 3 years. We're now married 54 years. Okay. And she puts up with me. I'm not always the easiest person in the world. And we have three children. These are all my family pictures.
Wow.
That's my oldest granddaughter. Being very beautiful. This is our wedding picture. We married in our backyard.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And she worked when I went to school. And one time it was funny. I was going, I think, to law school. We had 9 part-time jobs between the two of us. So there was always some kind of check coming in. And I thought I wanted to teach, but I felt a kind of negative attitude against the academic world because I think they're so competitive and tight as dealing with each other. One of the reasons I wrote a novel instead of something which I could have written historical is that there's so much nitpicking in the academic world. You write something, first thing somebody wants to do is come out and criticize you on some picayune-ish thing. And I just felt that I was glad that I wasn't in the academic world. I was about to, in fact, I had applied for some jobs and then decided to go into law. State College, New Mexico, near Las Cruces, was a place I had applied to. And it's an interesting place, and I don't know, I suppose. I think people in the academic world have become cynical, and maybe they've overcome that now. I did a certain amount of teaching, mostly law. I did some teaching at Kent, and I did some teaching in Marshall, and I co-taught at your school, Loyola. I co-taught a course in mediation because I wanted to get the experience of it. I'm ranting on, so tell me if you want me to hit anything more specifically.
Well, I heard you mentioning your political, say, affiliation or lack thereof. How politically minded were you when you were in high school?
I remember always catching the brochures that were passed around, having an opinion on it, being interested in it. As a kid, you're so busy going to school, it really wasn't until we were living in Evanston where I joined up the regular Democratic organization. We lived in Evanston, and then we bought a little house at 96th in Crandon, and I ran into some people I knew from college, and I joined the IVI, which I probably stayed into 14, 15, 16 years, holding every position up to the state chair. And politics, in fact, I should mention this, there was a show on BEZ, which was the biggest show, called Inside Politics with Bruce Dumont. And I was on that till I became a judge. And I like politics. It's kind of like sports in a way for a man. And just like with this horrible election, everybody talks about how good Karl Rove did in hustling it. So you get some pleasure in watching it and learning. And you get to hate your candidates that you back because you know them better. And we did. At one time we endorsed a number of independent aldermen. Indeed, we were regarded among the independents as really the second largest force in the city, larger than the Republicans, who were very dormant. Now everybody's dormant. Local politics.
So how were you regarded then as a part of the independent movement by the others?
People regard me generally as moderately liberal. It's not true. I'm a reformer. For me, the system has to be fair. Then I am not a person who believe strongly in the aspect of government program. I believe in the idea of the system being fair, and that has to be helpful for people. But as opposed to many of my friends, I was never regarded as left in a moderately socialist way. And I was always regarded as moderately liberal, but I worked very hard for many independent Republicans. And until recently, thought of myself as being truly an independent but a moderate Republican. But the party's gone so far over that the place of John Anderson became where Bill Clinton is. His Democratic Party has become conservative. And there is no left in American society. Okay? And one of my pride is I have that award from Project Leap there. Project Leap was called Legal Elections in All Precincts. And since we as IVI were working with both Republicans and Democrats, we became a liaison between the independent Democrats were fearful of vote fraud in the primary where they got counted out. Republicans were fearful of vote fraud in the fall, but neither of them concerned about the other's problem. And we created a structure that brought in a number of independent poll watchers who had ended massive vote fraud. And on the west side, the black community was voted. And we had cases, because 100 and some cases went to federal court, and each one was either a plea or a conviction. And they have things like the list of votes alphabetically with the same handwriting as being written down. And I think the two or three wars that were pretty awful. And that broke up. I don't know whether people are any better or any worse, but it created something where the black community became a meaningful force because they weren't owned and run. By the way, some of the same thing was done with the other communities. The Hispanic community, Mexican community, was done the same way, so it's not unique. And even on the west side, where the 24th Ward was the heaviest voting white community in history, was basically run by the machine with Jewish captains there, because everybody got... So it was a different world, and it's much more independent now all over. And, there's also something called the Shachtman case.
And just a moment, please, Judge Gardner.